There's a lot to talk about with a comment that marketing's broken.
He decided to dig into the real problem most contractors face.
I think the big issue is transparency and knowing what's actually happening.
We talk about the math behind marketing.
The inexperience and low barrier to entry, that is the problem.
Corey breaks down how most marketing failures are actually CRM and process failures.
They hire a marketing company and they expect that marketing company to perform to their expectations immediately.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Today's episode is for contractors who feel like they're spending money on marketing but don't truly know what's working. My guest is Corey Combs, owner of South Shore Roofing and Exteriors out of Tampa, Florida. Corey isn't a marketer by trade. He's a contractor who got tired of guessing. After years of frustration trying to reconcile marketing reports with what was actually happening inside his CRM, he decided to dig into the real problem most contractors face: lack of visibility and transparency through the entire sales funnel. In this conversation, we don't talk about hacks or shiny new tools. We talk about the math behind marketing, what a lead actually is, the difference between a contact and a qualified opportunity, how leaks happen between marketing and sales, and why cost per lead means almost nothing if you don't understand cost per booked appointment and cost per acquisition. Corey breaks down how most marketing failures are actually CRM and process failures, why contractors lose 40 to 50% opportunities before they ever make it into the sales pipeline, and how poor lead intake, follow-up, and attribution create mistrust between contractors and agencies. We also get into the reality of marketing spend, why cutting budgets too early kills momentum, how spam and existing customer traffic distort reports, and why understanding your full customer acquisition costs across all channels is the only way to make smart decisions. If you ever said marketing doesn't work, struggled to trust reports, or felt unsure where your money is actually going, this episode will give you clarity. It's about replacing emotion with data, guessing with process, and frustration with understanding. Let's get into it. What's up, everybody? My name is Mauricio Cardinal, and the host today for the AI Marketing and Home Services Show. Today, I have Corey Combs, the owner of South Shore Roofing Exteriors. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thanks, Mauricio. Appreciate it.
Yes. Welcome. Super excited to have you on. I want to talk about the math behind marketing. We talked about last time some of the things that we talked about, really interesting things that you're doing. Also, your very new product, a new company that's coming out that I think a lot of contractors should hear because it solves a very big problem, right, that a lot of contractors face. A lot of contractors say that marketing doesn't work. In your experience, what's usually broken when they say that?
Man, there's a lot to talk about with a comment that marketing's broken. I think mostly what people talk about is when they spend money with a marketer, whether it's through conventional means like Google. So you have your Google LSA, you have your SEO, which SEOs is a big one where contractors think SEO doesn't work. And then you have your things Meta, Instagram, Facebook, things like that. That would be like traditional digital marketing. And then you have other marketing means, which would be direct mail, things like yard signs, door knocking, things like that. Those are inorganic Facebook, Instagram, things like that. So those would all be considered marketing channels. I think what you're referencing more so is when people pay direct to marketing companies for leads straight from Google or leads straight from Facebook or even call centers that are supposed to get you leads or get you on roofs. And so when people say that it doesn't work, I think there's a couple things wrapped into that. Either they don't have good transparency with what's coming into the company and how it's translating down into their sales funnel, or there's just no good conversations and there's no good reporting from the people that are supposed to be getting them leads. And so I think the big issue is transparency and knowing what's actually happening. That's the biggest problem.
Well, we're going to talk about that specifically, the transparency part, right? Which is a big thing that we'll talk about soon. And I would agree with that. And I think there's a lot of mistrust too, right? Distrust between marketing agencies and contractors and home service companies between them. And obviously there's a lot of marketing companies that overpromise and underdeliver. So why do you think there's like so much disconnect and distrust in this industry?
I think it's the low barrier to entry, honestly. You have people that may have done some lead generation for themselves, or they may have done some lead generation for a client and they had great success in one instance, you know. So like, for an example, you see a lot of people, or you used to, you don't see it so much anymore, but talking about how many leads they can generate through Facebook or, you know, something like that. And I think there's really a lot of people that can just jump into the marketing space with absolutely no experience and present themselves as something they may or may not be, or they use their best use case as the guiding presentation for everybody, saying like, oh, I did this for this particular contractor in this market and I can do the same for you. And they don't understand that the market is super competitive and all of that stuff. So I just think it's the inexperience and low barrier to entry that is the problem.
Yeah, 100%. There's obviously with digital marketing, there's no barriers to entry. There's no license. You don't have to get a license, right? There's no regulations. It's an unregulated industry, and there's a lot of overhead, right? Not a lot of operating cost. If you're starting a manufacturing company, it's a different scenario. You need equipment. It's a lot of overhead. And roofing is even more. You have to find the labor. You have to buy the material. So even that, it's actually a little bit harder. Digital marketing just need a laptop, and that is the issue. And it kind of creates a lot of confusion because there's so many people that don't know what they're talking about. Kind of saying they say they know what they're talking about, and in reality that they're kind of not knowing. They don't know what to do and how they're doing it. And a lot of times contractors they kind of choose the too good to be true sometimes. Like it's like,
yeah,
if it's too much of a good thing, right? And typically it comes with people that have less experience that offer those things. So people that have less experience, they offer, hey, 100 leads guaranteed, 100 appointments guaranteed, or get your money back. And it sounds really good. Like, there's no loss, but it kind of creates that confusion. At the end of the day, like reputable companies, they don't do that. They don't do any of that stuff.
No. I think one of the other issues too, and it even puts quality marketers in a worse position, is a lot of times contractors will wait until it's a dire situation for them where they're willing to actually spend some money on marketing and they need it fixed very quickly. And so they're already in a desperate situation, and now they hire a marketing company and they expect that marketing company to perform to their expectations immediately. And you and I both know that's not how it works. I mean, sometimes you can get ramped up pretty quickly and get some results pretty quickly, but that's if the market isn't super saturated. But if they're in a saturated market where there's a lot of competition in the digital space, it takes a lot more time and it takes a lot more creativity to really get ramped up and start to see some results in those types of markets. So I think that is another piece of the puzzle that puts good quality marketers into a bad position.
Yeah, 100%. What do you think they should, when do you think contractors start investing in their marketing? Like what level of revenue? Like what is a good metric? Because it's a lot of confusion between that space. Like, and typically marketing budget, like what is because there's a lot of confusion with that. Like what's your opinion on that?
Yeah. And I just want to say, I'm not a professional marketer, and I don't want to represent myself from that side. I can only share my experience of, you know, me and my companies. I have a couple different companies, and then, you know, I've done some consulting over the years with other companies, and I've seen what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them. And, you know, from my experience, and another piece of this is it depends on what your business model is and what your goals and objectives are. So there's a lot of conversation around canvassing and door knocking right now, and what's happening with the insurance space and how things are changing with that side of things. Should you go to strictly retail and, you know, all of that stuff. And so it really depends on your market, what your goals are and what your long-term plans for your company are. For me, my perspective is it doesn't matter if you're an insurance heavy, restoration contractor and that's your business model. I still think you need to market your company and you need to spend some time and some effort really creating some space where you show up on Google, where you get reviews, where you have some branding might not be the right word for it, but you have some community awareness posts on social media where you're not expecting so much to get leads, but you need to have a game plan so that you have a little bit of a blended approach so that if you need to pivot, you've already laid the groundwork and the foundation, so it's easier for you to get ramped up rather than starting from zero. So, in order for you to be successful, I think you need to spend at least 3% of revenue to do some marketing outside of how you generate your leads if you're doing like canvassing or door knocking or whatever. If you're going for a strict retail approach and you're a newer company, that percentage is much higher. I mean, you're going to have to be 8 to 10% of revenue in order to be able to get ramped up and really get some visibility out there so you do get some good quality opportunities.
100%. And that's his perspective as a business owner on that side. So I think it's important that people hear that. Let's talk about the math behind marketing. What is the most important metric that you look for when evaluating the effectiveness of a marketing campaign?
That's a really loaded question. There isn't one, really. There's no metric that says, hey, this has been successful or not. The one that people look at and they think is the metric is your lead to close sales conversion metric, which means you're looking at your total leads and then you're looking at what your percentage of closed sales are off that number of leads. The other one people follow pretty closely is the revenue based off those leads. So your gross revenue based off those leads. The problem with that is if you're looking at it in a totality of leads generated versus your closing rate, there's a lot of things that can happen in between where those leads can leak in your funnel, meaning there's a lot of touches in between the generation of the opportunity. So let me back up really quickly. Let's clarify what we mean by lead versus what we mean by a potential lead, okay? Because those are two different things. From a business owner standpoint, when I look at what's an actual lead, that's a qualified opportunity that hits my CRM so I can bid on that job or create an estimate for that person that is an opportunity for me to sell them. In the lead generation world, a lead is a contact into the company. And so we use that term lead very generically. And I think there's some clarity that needs to happen on that term, on what we're classifying as a lead. Are we talking about, is it qualified or is it just a contact to the company and it hasn't been qualified yet? So I think that's the first piece we need some differentiation on. And then the next piece is if we're looking at a qualified opportunity, that still doesn't mean that qualified opportunity hit my CRM as a job opportunity. So there's some filtering that we need to do in between the generation of that lead, the qualification of that lead, and then it getting into my CRM as a job opportunity that I can bid on. Yeah, I was just going to say, so I think we need to really... I think we need to parse that out before we talk about, is it a lead or is it not a lead?
Yeah. Another way to define this is if you're like in a sales organization that has people, they should define it MQLs, right? Marketing qualified lead. SQLs, which is sales qualified lead. And you kind of measure the results based on MQLs on the marketing side. And then how many that turn out to SQL, sales qualified lead. And then basically another way to think that is another one is booked appointment. So people do it differently. Companies do it differently. They can measure MQLs, they can measure SQLs, or they can measure booked appointments. And that's kind of how you define that, depends on how you do it. But that's kind of like the algorithm, like what people are looking at is those numbers as well. And you mentioned about booked appointments, right? Booked cost per opportunity. Another metric you look at is cost per sale or cost per acquisition. How do you kind of measure that? And that's kind of the terms of the software. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, your customer acquisition cost, so your CAC, is really going to be defined on, you know, what your total advertising and marketing spend is. And this is another, I think there's a lot of confusion around this as well, because people will just look at one channel, or they don't aggregate all of their advertising and marketing costs and add that into what it actually costs to bring a customer into your company. Okay. So the customer acquisition cost is really going to be the barometer of, you know, how much do you need to spend total with all your advertising and marketing, whatever channel it is, to bring in that particular sold customer into your company. And so if you don't track all of your marketing costs, and by the way, digital is just one channel. Like for an example, we pay a company every month, we pay a company to put out 3 organic social media posts for us per week. That's a marketing cost, right? Even though there's no direct lead attribution to that marketing cost, that is still a marketing cost. My yard signs are a marketing cost. My truck wraps are a marketing cost. Like all of these things are a marketing cost. And so we need to aggregate all of those marketing costs. And then we need to divide that by the number of the customers that we brought in and our gross revenue. And so there's a formula there that actually figures out what our true customer acquisition cost is.
And how do you measure that? You measure that through the CRM? Like how do you, like a spreadsheet, like typically how do you measure that in your business?
That's really where the challenge is. And so for a long time, we were doing it by a spreadsheet. And so you need to track those metrics. You need to be able to pull them out of your CRM, and then you plug them into a spreadsheet with the formula. So that gives you what your customer acquisition cost is. There's other formulas you need to figure out, you know, about your sales team. It's like your net sale per lead issued, right? Like how much do you actually make off of or average off of each lead that was issued to your salesperson? And the reason this is important is because if you're spending a certain amount of money on marketing to get these leads in, and it outpaces what your average sale is, then you're going to be in a deficit, and your marketing spend you're not getting an ROI on your marketing spend. And so there's, like I said, there's a lot of things that you need to track in between to make sure that it may look good on paper. You're like, oh, I'm getting in a bunch of leads. Great. You know, but my cash flow doesn't match with what the amount of leads we're getting in. And if you can't diagnose where the breakdown is, are you spending too much on a channel? Is your net sale, is your net sale not creating an ROI for what you're spending on these leads? Then you're going to be in a deficit, and your lead spend is going to outpace your revenue. Gross revenues, it might look really, really good, but you really have to extrapolate how that money is getting spent and then what your return on what you're spending actually is. So to see if you're profitable.
Typically, what kind of marketing ROI are you looking for in terms of spend?
If you're established, I mean, you want to be 3% or lower. I mean, that's because if you're established and you're doing these organic things to really drive an organic presence, when that's SEO, that's, you know, organic social, you know, that's referrals, you know, those all of those things that you would consider organic lead sources, there's less cost to those than direct lead. You know, Google, your average lead cost on Google, let's just use a, you know, PPC average or something like that, you're going to be $300 to $400 per lead if you're just looking at your lead cost on your PPC. If you can get that lead cost down to, you know, let's say $150, $180, you're doing really well. The only way that's going to happen is if you get it really dialed in, you get your click-through rate good, you get your response rate good, you know, all of those things have to, you know, they all have to work together. And so once you get that all dialed in, now your percentage of spend to revenue is going to go down.
Yeah. You mentioned that a lot of marketing failures are actually CRM failures. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is there are a lot of tools out there right now. Well, I wouldn't say that a lot, but there are good tools out there right now to follow the lead from its originate to when it gets sent over to the contractor. And you mentioned, you know, qualified lead opportunities and not qualified lead opportunities. And you guys are pretty good at parsing that out before that gets to the contractor. From my frustration for years working with my digital marketing company, the company I work with, I would get my monthly report from them about how many leads were sent over. And then I'm looking at the opportunities I have in my CRM and I'm like, man, these just aren't matching at all, right? And what we had to do is we had to go through and we had to do a CRM audit. So we would have to like pull up that phone number, look and see what happened to that client all the way down. Then we would look at the phone number. Oh, we can't find the phone number in the CRM. What the hell happened to this lead that we're showing came in? It's a qualified lead from Google, but it actually never made it into the CRM. What happened? And then you bring in some of the tools like automatic booking. You know, now we have these AI agents that are supposed to, you know, work with our potential clients, walk them through the funnel, get them set up into the CRM with an appointment. So we have a lot of different channels now and ways that these leads can get into our CRM. And if we don't have a direct way to follow the handoff from you as the marketer to us in the CRM and the things that happen in between that handoff, then there's a lot of leakage there. And what we found is now that we've really started to be able to track that at a granular level, there can be upwards of a 40% to 50% drop off just in between those qualified leads getting into our CRM, which is kind of crazy. So now I'm looking at the quote unquote qualified leads that got into my CRM, and you're coming to me and saying, hey, I gave you 100 leads last month. And I'm like, no, you didn't. I've only got 30 opportunities. Well, what happened? And you're going to say, look, you're not answering the phone, or you're not getting them into the CRM. And what do you think the contractor is going to say to you? Yes, we are. You know what I mean? You're just sending me shitty leads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's a real leak that happens right there. And so then if we're just looking at the CRM, it doesn't necessarily tell the story. But then we have these leads that got into the CRM and they might not have turned into a job opportunity for whatever reason. Maybe our admin dropped the ball. Maybe we couldn't get in touch with them. So we had an automation that fired them into the CRM, but when we tried to follow up with them and get an appointment scheduled, we couldn't reach them. So there's some leaking that happens there. And then down the sales funnel, maybe we had a job opportunity in there, but the appointment never got scheduled. Maybe our sales rep never actually ran the appointment. So there's a lot of things that can happen downstream that if you're not paying attention to the potential leakage that happens at every single stage, when you get to what was sold at the end of the month versus what you're saying the total leads that were generated and sent over to the contractor, there's a real asymmetry there, and there's no way to track it down, and there's no way for us to reconcile that together pretty quickly. And so that's where the conflict comes, and I think that's where the biggest challenge with the marketer and the contractor comes in. And I've felt this pain for years, man. And I think we're pretty well buttoned up. I mean, we had a bunch of spreadsheets to track it. We would sit down and do CRM audits, you know, at the end of the month with our marketing company. It was just extremely painful to the point where I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. So that's where we really started building these tools out and where we are today with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about that right now. But before I get to that, you would be amazed at, even today, right? You were saying all this stuff, which is really kind of good business practices, I would say. It's just kind of, I would say it's kind of blocking and tackling. It's the basics. It's about understanding what you're paying and getting a good understanding of the ROI, right? If you're getting leads, right? Just having a good process for lead intake, for scheduling appointments, how you answer the phone, right? The tone, your script, if you're using script on the sales stuff. So all this stuff is not rocket science. It's not super hard. It's been around for a long time. We're not talking about anything new, but it's the basic stuff that even a lot of people today, because you said yourself, you work with contractors, you're itemized, that they don't do the basic stuff. And this is really what I'm trying, because I see it in my firsthand. These guys, a lot of them don't understand this stuff, which is really kind of basic. It's kind of exactly what I said, blocking and tackling, the basic business ROI stuff. So that's important to understand. Now, obviously, it's something that you build is difficult to kind of understand, because there's a lot of different tools that you know, unless you like spend time and actually building it out, thinking about this, it's hard to solve like the actual like attribution and marketing and all that stuff. So talk about like what you did, like how you did that, what tool you're using, because you're using combinational tools and the integrations you're building out.
I've been working on this problem for 4 years, and I looked and looked and looked and looked for something to solve this problem. And we built out some tools with Zapier, and I paid somebody to build these really, really good spreadsheets that we were using where we could just pull in the numbers. But what we kept finding over and over and over and over is, unless you have good, clean data to work off of, the end result of your, your aggregated totals still aren't going to be super accurate. So you have to be able to trust the data that comes in. And then we figured out we had another problem, because if you're not doing a really good job of consolidating where all your leads are coming from, and you don't have a really great way to attribute your sources, now tracking those in your CRM, you're relying on whoever answers the phone to give you your lead source attribution. And that's problematic as well. So if you're trying to really figure out your ROI on spend and you have no good way to track really where that lead came from, then those numbers aren't going to be super accurate. I mean, you can get a pretty good idea on what's going on, but if you're really trying to look at how you're spending your money on a particular lead source and you're not super accurate at tracking, it's kind of a pointless exercise, and it'd get really frustrating. And that's what happened to me. And so about 2 years ago, I really started thinking about how to get this solved. And so the first generation of this was we were pulling all of this stuff out of WhatConverts. We were pulling all the stuff out of our CRM. We were pulling all the stuff out of our spreadsheets. And I was sending that over to somebody, and they were creating these reports for us based on all of the stuff that we had sent over to them from report. And we used something called Fathom. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a report generating software. And so we built all these templates out, and then, you know, then we were kind of getting our, what was happening. And then we took our books, you know, the stuff from our QuickBooks and all of that. And we started to get to a little bit more clarity on conversion rates and spending and all of that, but it still wasn't accurate. And so we tried to figure out, how do we go to the source here and pull this information out of, by, you know, API calls, webhooks, things like that. How do we pull this information out of where we needed to? And that's where we got to now, is we figured out how to pull things from Google, from the API. We figured out how to pull things from WhatConverts. We figured out how to pull things from, Go High Level and things like that. And then we had to figure out, how do we get that information out of the CRMs? Because the second piece of this is, the reports from the CRMs are trash. Doesn't matter what CRM you're using. Doesn't matter if you're using Leap. Doesn't matter if you're using JobNimbus. You know, even with JobNimbus Insights, if you don't have super clean data and it's not set up really, really well in the beginning, it's your reports aren't accurate. And so it's really frustrating when you're trying to match back lead attribution, figure out conversion rates and all of that stuff. So what we did is we built some tools. We cobbled together some tools about a year and a half ago, and we figured out how to pull off this data and how to get this data flowing well. And then we figured that out. And so after that, we went ahead and built our own database, and we built our own tools. And we started doing data verifications and figured out how to do data verifications. And so now we have a really great tool where we we pull things from your lead aggregating software. So whether it's WhatConverts, Go High Level, CallRail, whatever it is, we pull all that information out of there. We put it in a bucket, and then we pull everything out of your CRM. We put it in a bucket, and then we just start doing data matching. And we do all these confirmations, and then we spit out numbers. And then once we spit out these numbers, now we follow that stuff all the way through the sales funnel and do conversion ratios on everything down your sales funnel. So you can see transparency across the board of all the contacts generated, all the qualifications from leads. I mean, even, you know, one big problem that we have is, and I know you guys have, is let's say we have billboards, for an example. We spend money on billboards, and what do customers do? They see your billboard every day, but when they're ready to call you, what do?
They call your, they might Google your name.
They're going to Google your name. And then they're going to click the first thing that comes up, which is your paid ad. And then they're going to click on that paid ad, and it's going to look like they came through that Google ad, right? Same thing happens with existing customers. They know your name, but they don't know your phone number. They forget your phone number, so they Google you, and then they click on your paid ad. And so even though they're a current customer, they click on your Google ad, that ad looks like a click-through, and there's generally no way to parse that out. So what we do is we verify that phone number in your CRM, and we give it a direct attribution, and then we categorize that correctly. So that's really how we've really started parsing everything out, and then we follow that lead journey all the way through the sales funnel.
Yeah. And you're solving, so you know the actual where the leaks are in the funnel, right? Or you would say in the sales process, right? Another way to define it, in the sales process. What are the most common leaks that you find?
The lead being qualified to actually getting into the CRM as a qualified job opportunity. That's a really big leak right there that we find. The next large leak that we find is your sales reps going out to an appointment and then never writing an estimate for that client. And that's another big leak that we see. And the pushback that I've been getting from people is like, well, yeah, you can find that out in your CRM. And it's like, you can, if you know who to go look at. So if you have a bunch of clients in a certain work stage in your CRM, let's say it's the appointment created work stage, and you have all of those people in that work stage, well, now you've got to manually go in there and you've got to click on every single one to see exactly what's going on. What we've done is we've aggregated all of these totals of clients in the work stage, and we've checked that against what should happen downstream, but we have also checked that against the previous work stage to see what happened. And then if these, let's say you get 10 leads this week, okay? And out of those 10 leads, only 7 of them made it into actually becoming a job opportunity in the CRM. Well, now we've got to figure out what happened with those 3 leads. So I, as a business owner, have to go back into my CRM and I have to click that work stage and I have to investigate every single person in that work stage. Then I've got to go into the next stage and I've got to investigate every single person in that work stage. It takes a long time and a lot of people don't do it because of that. With what we've built, you can just see it clear as day, how many you click on it, and then you can pull up the customers that didn't make it into that next work stage. You can click on that and you can see exactly why. And so we've just created a filtering process so that rather than looking at all of these, you can look at the ones that are problematic and see exactly what's going on. So you can have a good conversation about, all right, is there a real reason? Is there a legitimate reason why these people didn't make it into the next work stage? Or is it just my sales team being lazy? The really cool thing is we've distilled that down one layer further, and we track the sales rep the same way. So you can see exactly how many opportunities the rep has gotten, what they did with those opportunities. Did they run the appointment or not? Did they create the estimate or not? Did they set them in follow-up or not? Did they sell them or not? So we're following. And so you can see the relationship all the way downstream.
Yeah. And this helps you identify any gaps in training or accountability. What do you do with that data? How do you, okay, so let's say you have a rep that is not doing as well. How do you use that to train them?
Yeah, most, well, there's two answers to this question. So most organizations wait until the end of the month or the beginning of the next month to kind of know what happened the month prior. And so trying to correct things mid-month doesn't generally happen, and they don't get to see what happened until it's too late to actually correct it. And so what we're doing is we're providing real-time transparency so that if you have a sales meeting every week or you have check-ins with your sales reps every week, now you can look at where their funnel is, aggregated totals for a different, you know, for a set time period. So you can look at this week, you can look at this month, whatever it is, and you can see how many opportunities they have in their funnel. And if you noticed one of your reps does really well at writing estimates for clients, but most or all of those estimates go into the follow-up work stage, then we know there's a problem with them closing at the kitchen table at their first touch. And so now I can coach that rep. I know it's a presentation issue with that rep. And so I can coach that rep on, we can start talking about what's going on at the kitchen table and why he's not closing the percentage of people at the kitchen table that he should be. More importantly, you might have a rep that looks like they have a good close rate because they get at the kitchen table and they close people, but they're not actually writing a good ratio of estimates. So their appointment to estimate ratio is off, even though their close rate might look fairly decent or their gross revenue might look fairly decent, but compared to the actual opportunities they have, it's pretty low. And you can see that in real time, and you can go back and instead of waiting till the end of the month, mid-month, you can look and see where everybody is and see if they're capitalizing on all the opportunities that you as a business owner have provided for them in that month.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just curious, do you use like AI for sales training? Are you done anything with like there's a lot of software now, there's a lot of AI tools that allow you to kind of listen to the calls, right? Listen to the presentations when people are online. Have you used that to train reps like in specific areas?
I haven't. I think you're referencing those types of tools. Those are great because you can track your team. You can listen to their calls. You can diagnose where they're, you know, you can set up your sales process in there and you can pinpoint exactly where they're struggling. I think for me, the only way that's useful is if you see the full picture of what's going on with those opportunities that you've given your rep. And so I think if you diagnose the area, now you can, because it might not be a kitchen table close. So it might not be a presentation issue, right? Where they're closing at the kitchen table, and it might not even be an issue if you're a two call close company, right? You have your inspection where you go and you meet the client, you take your pictures, you talk to them, you do all that stuff, and then you set your presentation up for later on. And or if you're a one call close, it might be just an issue, an estimating issue. So it might not even be they're following the process, they're following the word tracks, and they're doing all that stuff. But if they're responsible for creating estimates, it might be an estimating issue. They might be estimating way too high, and therefore they're not able to close, even though they're following the scripts. So we have to look and see where the breakdown is in the sales funnel and be able to identify that quickly based on the sales rep. So this tool really augments some of the other ones out there. And so you can get really dialed in on where the leaking is.
What technology are you using for this? Are you, is it, you said last time we talked about it, it's kind of go high level, right? Is it, is it before anything before the appointment is go ahead level, right? That's what you did. And then after that is the CRM, whatever CRM they're using. Can you talk about that?
So we're using other tools. We're tying into go high level. We're tying into what converts. We're tying into call rail. We're using other tools to actually pull that information out of those systems. And so I don't want to talk about what tools we're using because, you know, that's kind of the secret sauce. And I don't want to talk about the part of the secret sauce is the tools that we're using. But the other piece of the secret sauce is it took a long time for us to figure out how to organize the data so that it doesn't become a jumbled mess when you get it, because there's so many variables out there. There's so many, if you look at like CRMs, for an example, even if you're using JobNimbus, right, there's an infinite ways that you can set up JobNimbus. So the way that the data comes out of JobNimbus can come out in infinite ways. So what we had to do was figure out like, all right, well, what do we do with this and how do we organize it? So that was the other part of the secret sauce, is it just took some time to really figure those things out. And to make it even more complicated, now we're trying to figure out financial data. So we want to pull data out of QuickBooks or your accounting software and all of that stuff, so we can get you some numbers to be able to look at what I'm actually spending, right? What am I actually spending? What's my ROI? What am I spending on each rep? Am I getting my rate of return on that rep? You know, all of that stuff, the conversion rates and all of that. There's infinite ways that you can set up your QuickBooks too, right? So it took a long time for us to think through all of these problems and come up with solutions for it. But I think we've done a really good job at doing that. None of that was AI related. It was all data organization related. I think where AI is going to come in a little bit in some of the future versions is, now we've got the data for you. We have to give you the insights on how to use this data, where the problem is, who's responsible for the problem, and how to fix the problem. So that's the piece that we're working on right now, is creating insights so that when there's a metric that doesn't meet industry standards, it basically turns red. You click on that and now it gives you the insight tool on what you can do. I think where AI is going to come in is once you have an idea on those metrics that aren't meeting industry standard, now we can have an AI tool that you can go in and you can ask the AI tool questions, and the AI tool will tell you what to do based on the conversions, based on the insights, and then you can get specific actions from the AI tools. AI is kind of a misnomer. It's not really artificial intelligence. It's a large language model that assesses and evaluates and organizes data. And so if the data is not super clean and easy to use for the AI is not going to be able to spit out something that's super useful.
What has surprised you the most about, like, once you have the data about specific marketing channels, what surprised you the most? Has you changed your mind based on the data? Like, hey, this is actually working or this is not actually working. Can you talk about that?
So from the marketing standpoint, what's been the biggest surprise is how many actual spam calls we get off of our marketing channels. Like, that was super surprising to me. And that was a tough one to swallow.
Is that because you're using tracking numbers?
It's not only because we're using tracking numbers, but we're evaluating some of the call. So we're evaluating the call transcripts, and we have some stuff set up. You know what? This is how AI ties in. Okay. Fair point. We're actually taking the call transcripts and we're evaluating the call transcripts, and we have certain categories of calls and what those transcripts should say and some key words in those transcripts and what qualifies as spam as well. And so we're evaluating those with AI. And so that's how we're being able to categorize and really confirm that it's a spam call. And then some data verification on top of that. So it's been really surprising how many spam calls we actually get off of our marketing. That surprised me.
One thing that this is a problem that we've had as well with our clients. It's a very common problem, and it has caused a lot of issues with our clients that are not happy, and I see their point. One thing that we did is that we implemented this software called Nomo Robo, which prevents 90% of the spam. Basically, it has a database of 1 million numbers that are like, you know, tagged as spam. And if that number comes in from that database, it blocks it. So it works through the API. It's pretty, not that, you know, you need a developer to set it up, and it's not super expensive, but it has greatly reduced the spam for our client. Because if you're using tracking numbers, right, the most common, if you're using CallRail, if you're using Go Ahead Level, they all use typically use Twilio, right? Twilio is the actual back end of the system that works. And Twilio has a lot of spam numbers. It has like when you use those tracking numbers are like recycled numbers. And that's an issue. So that is one way we solved it. So I don't know if you want, I can connect you with someone in that situation if you're looking for that.
Yeah, we've since then put those filters in place. But that was what was the most surprising to me is just it's insane. Without that visibility, the catch 22 of what you're talking about is you put that in place and then it looks like your marketing is not doing as well because the leads get cut down significantly. And what I didn't understand or realize was if you're looking at your total amount of leads that came in and let's say 50% of those are actually spam, you're feeling good about the lead generation number. And I think some marketing companies rely on that number too, because it looks good, right? It's the same thing as a contractor relying on their gross revenue number. They say, oh, you know, I did $1 million last year. And it's like, well, cool. How much money did you actually make off that $1 million? How profitable were you off that $1 million? And what you'll find out is some of those folks didn't actually make very much money off that $1 million at all. So that gross revenue number is a vanity stat that people, you know, use to make themselves look better. And I kind of felt good. I was like, oh, you know, look at all these calls we're getting. But a good portion of those, even organic off of our GBP posting, right? Spam, just crap. So that was what surprised me the most on the lead generation side. What's really surprised me the most, so we're beta testing this with about 12 contractors right now. We've got it really dialed in. The amount of contractors that don't know what to do with this information has surprised me the most. And the confusion surrounding what to do when they figure out, like, let's say for an example, one of the biggest issues that we saw from the handoff, which is, you know, the lead gets qualified. We know it's a quality lead. And then there's just this huge drop off between it getting into the CRM and being categorized as a job opportunity. There's a huge disconnect there, and people just don't call or have good success with getting back in touch with their leads and getting the leads, even though they're good qualified leads, they're not getting into the CRM as opportunities. That number has been as high as like 57%, which is huge. And so that surprised me the most. And it's just because there is no good lead intake process.
Yeah, it's very common. It's a very common challenge. It's exactly what a lot of, I said, I mean, typically the bigger companies have this kind of figured out, because that's why they use it to scale. What I've seen is that any company that's doing well, like 10 million or up, or even, you know, 20 million, they have like a call center. They have a very call right away. It's very strict. It's very like standardized. They have a process for that. So it's a very common challenge, right? And a lot of times that, you know, the marketing agency gets blamed. What are the benchmarks that contractors should be aiming for at each stage of the funnel?
Again, that's a loaded question, because you and I both know that, well, The only reason I know this is because of my companies talking to other contractors and really trying to solve this problem for some years and really looking at this stuff pretty closely. When you dial up your ads, your ad spend, your marketing channels and all of that stuff, and you're like, you know what, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at this and we're going to try to get as many leads as we can into the company, that has its own set of problems, because now you're getting in front of a lot more people, which means you're going to have the higher propensity of spam, people calling looking for jobs, people calling looking for the wrong company, people that are existing clients calling you for reasons outside of a new job opportunity. So you're going to exponentially increase the probability of that happening. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to just say, okay, I'm going to reduce my ad spend, because now you're pulling back your opportunity of getting in front of people that can actually use and buy your services from a qualified standpoint. So the trick is really seeing where those opportunities are coming from, how like if you're getting a lot of spam for PPC for an example, well, I need to figure out how to get that dialed in rather than reducing my ad spend. Because if I reduce my ad spend, then I'm not going to be getting those opportunities. I'm not going to be as visible on Google. So I forgot where I was going with this. But the answer isn't always cutting your ad spend or cutting your marketing company. Sometimes the answer is, I need to know what's happening in between all of these different stages. And more importantly, I need to know what to do with this information.
Once you have everything integrated, you have the data correct, how do you make decisions based on the data? What's the practice look like of a contractor who's actually making decisions based on data?
When it comes to managing your sales team, that's just a weekly, you just need to stay on top of them weekly. I mean, you know, your sales meetings need to be structured in a way where you're looking at the sales funnel with each individual on your sales team, and then your funnel as a total with everyone. And then you need to have conversations with them around what seems to be the successes, what seems to be the challenges, and what seems to be kind of the intermediate stuff that you guys as a team need to look at together and figure out how to solve and put as many opportunities in the hands of your sales team and making sure they're doing what they need to be doing with those opportunities. So that looks different from the sales team than it does on the marketing side. On the marketing side, you need to look at that stuff weekly for sure, but you need to do a monthly evaluation and see what channels are producing the best for you all the way down. What are turning into good sold jobs, right? And then evaluating what you're spending on those. And you need to look at that monthly. Need to look at that month over month, comparing one month to the next month. You need to look at it at 3-month blocks, and then you need to look at it at 6-month blocks to see what are the commonalities, what are the trends. And now you can evaluate, hey, we should stop spending money on this particular lead source because it just does not produce for us. And hey, maybe this lead source actually has been the dark horse for us when we look at it total overall. And so it just takes some discipline on looking at the numbers and not making emotional knee-jerk reactions.
You'd be surprised at how many people don't do that. I say most of them do not do that. I say majority don't do that.
That's where the overall challenge for me, you know, as somebody that's wanting to introduce this. Look, man, every contractor I talk to, even some of the people that run these PE groups, they all have this same problem, right? But when I talk to contractors individually, they're like, yeah, man, this is really cool. This is really great. But they truly don't understand how this is going to help them. And I know that there's going to be an adoption issue here because I've seen it over and over and over. So now what I'm trying to do is I'm working on presenting this much differently to the contractor and really helping them understand, like, this isn't just a piece of software. This just isn't another app you're buying. This isn't another CRM you're buying. This is something that's truly going to show you where your money's leaking on a granular level. And more importantly, we're going to, I hate saying it this way, but we're going to hold your hand to tell you what to do with this information if it's not meeting industry standards at each stage that's not meeting industry standards. So you as a contractor, all you have to do is just have the conversation with whoever's responsible down the line so you can fix it.
Well, it's very interesting you say that because we have the same issue, adoption. So even though you solved that problem, you're still saying that a lot of contractors still don't get it. Don't get the
they don't get it.
Very interesting. I'll give you an example. So I did a workshop with a contractor, one of our clients, explained this whole process about, you know, cost per lead, cost per sale, cost per acquisition, 45 minutes. Based on the questions he asked afterwards, I knew he didn't understand what I was saying. And I sent him the recording, all that stuff. And what ended up happening was, just give you an example, just a real life example. They started a Facebook campaign and they got appointments and they didn't get any deals, I think, but they only spent like $2,000. And I said, like, why are you doing that? It's like $2,000 for a Facebook campaign. Like, a month, you're going to stop after a month. I don't know. How do you handle that? That's kind of like, I guess, just lack of education and understanding.
It is. I mean, you know, you can't build any momentum like that. And I think that this speaks to another really practical use for what we've built is, you know, when you look at it month over month, you can see the momentum with certain lead sources. So you can look and see, you're like, okay, we're actually generating more leads with this lead source. But what's also happening is we're getting more opportunities down the funnel. And depending on what you sell, right, there's a sales cycle, okay? Your sales cycle may not hit in 2 weeks. It may not hit in 3 weeks. Your sales cycle might be an average of 6 weeks. So if you're generating leads in 1 month, you're not going to see that the return on those leads until the next month and the following month after that, because your sales cycle goes 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 weeks. And so if you understand that, and this will help you understand what your sales cycle is, if you understand that, you're like, okay, I know it's actually going to take me 6 to 8 to 10 to 12 weeks in order for me to get some momentum here to where we're actually getting some of these deals to sign and become contracts, you know. And if there's clarity there and you can actually see it with the numbers, simply, easily, not with a report, you know, but where you can actually see these numbers transpiring real time on your dashboard, then it'll make you feel better. It'll give you some comfort level because there's transparency. So what I've learned here, I've done some consulting and coaching. I've also got a really good friend two of the bigger consultants in the construction industry, and they both say the same thing. We all have had the same experience. Contractors know they need some help. The problem is they don't know exactly where they need the help. And then when you tell them where they need the help and you show them what to do, there's still a gap. And it's an intimidation gap and it's an implementation gap. So education isn't the end. There has to be some real easy explanation of us taking the next step, which is them being able to implement that and do as much as we can for them until they learn it and get comfortable with it. Once they learn it and get comfortable with it, it's easy. But it's just like any concept that you're trying to learn for the first time, there's a huge intimidation factor. And when people don't understand something, they're just not going to be able to do it. And I think more importantly, if they don't want to look like a fool. And so if they don't get it and they don't feel like they can use it, then they're not going to adopt it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would love to help you with that adoption challenge you said. I think it just requires a lot of education. I think that's the only thing that I can say. So, and I think based on what you're building out, it's a very needed solution. But you just said yourself, I thought it would be like something, hey, people would actually like, hey, this is great, let's start doing it. But I guess there's still a challenge of getting it people to use it. Okay.
Marketing companies get it. These PE firms get it. Yesterday I met with one of these industry consultants. I met with their team. They looked at it and they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is going to save us. She said just with one client, it'll probably save them 8 to 10 hours a week just producing the reports, grabbing the data and producing the reports. It'll save them 8 to 10 hours a week.
Awesome. Awesome. So Corey, where can people find you?
For now, you can just email me at Corey, Corey, at SSRFlorida.com. So Sam Robert, Florida spelled out, .com. You can get in touch with me like that. We'll have our website up. We still haven't landed on a name for this. We're looking at January to launch our product to everyone, general public. We still haven't landed on a name, so we'll have our website done here very shortly. We've built out the architecture. We just have to get the branding and the landing. And I had to change our messaging because I had the same assumption you did. People are going to look at this and be like, oh my God, I got to get it. And I found that that's not true. So I've changed the messaging a little bit so it lands when we bring it to market.
Yeah. And Corey is a very successful contractor, right, in Florida. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the link to his websites on in Florida. And obviously when the link comes out, I can update the description and on the website. So he doesn't have a name yet. He showed me the demo. I think it looks great. It solves a big problem. So I'm sure we'll connect more once it's out and we can talk more about this.
Yeah, for sure.
Corey, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.